Sometimes we get a talk because of a specific problem that we see in a group. Sometimes we get a talk because to address certain individual responses in a group. Sometimes we get a talk because we need to give the talk. That's going to be the case this morning. I'm going to start with one of the my favorite stories in the Bible. And I've talked about it several times before, but I'm going to talk about it again. And that's in Matthew, the 14th chapter, and verse 22. Straightway, Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. When the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. Fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It's a spirit. And they cried out for fear. Straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, Be of good cheer, it's I. Be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. He said, Come. When Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And when they were come to the ship, the wind ceased. Then they were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, Of a truth, thou art the Son of God. O ye of little faith, why do you doubt? That's what we want to work on this morning. Why do you doubt? Because this isn't a statement of blame. This is a learning statement that he's trying to teach Peter, and one that we probably can learn as well. There are certain times in life when, as Doug led the song this morning, Count Your Blessings, I've been thinking about that first verse for the last 2 weeks. Now I can't think of it. When upon life's billows thou tempest toss, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your blessings. I've been thinking about that the last 2, 3, 4 weeks because of various and sundry problems. But we want to look at this morning of the story of why you doubt. There was a story about a skier. First time skier that went up the Swiss Alps with a friend of his who was a skier. They got quite a ways up the mountain and for one reason or another got dumped off the ski lift. We weren't very high at that point in time, but they were away from where they were supposed to be. Happened to another couple, same thing happened to. There are four of them up here. He's the only one that doesn't know how to ski. It's his first time. So the other guy says, let's go, I think I can get us over to one of the ski runs so we can get back down. So they went over to the other ski runs. Well, you go over to I'm not a skier, but apparently when you go over to a ski run and there's a skull and crossbones, it's not a good sign. Well, they went to one that was a skull and crossbones. About 85 degrees, you know, 90 degrees is straight up and down, 85 degrees is pretty close. And this guy is obviously scared to death. And the other guy, who is an experienced skier, says, I only have one piece of advice for you. One piece of advice. Now, I would have think it would have something to do with trees, but it didn't have anything to do with trees. It says, whatever you do, don't look down. Don't look down. You seen those Wide World of Sports things they used to show where they went off and in and they tumbled and this and that and the other? Well, that's what happens if you look down. I often wonder about these stories that we read in the Bible, how much isn't in there. I wonder if Jesus sees Peter and Peter's walking on the water, and he is walking on the water, doing a very nice job, walking on the water. Suddenly, all of this commotion becomes aware to him, and I wonder if Jesus coaxed him. Peter, don't look down. Don't look down. Don't look down. Forget the wind. Forget it. Don't look down, Peter. Look at me, Peter. Don't look down. Splash. Splash. Peter did walk on water. In fact, he may have walked on water twice. We don't know how the story happened. He walked on water going to Jesus. He splashed. Then he said, "Lord, save me." And it doesn't say what happened, but they weren't at the boat yet. So obviously God picked, or Jesus dealt him his hand, picked him back up, and they walked the rest of the way to the boat. I wonder, it would be interesting to know the rest of the story there, the rest of the story. But what happened to Peter is what happens to us. His focus shifted from Jesus to the storm. He saw the wind. Because of that change in focus, it gave rise to a new set of thoughts and feelings, panic and inadequacy. He became frightened. And guess what? He couldn't walk on water anymore. And he had to say, "Lord, save me." Some of you may be too young to remember the cartoons. Remember Wile E. Coyote? Always running after the Roadrunner. And the Roadrunner would throw him a curveball, and Wile E. Coyote would be just going so fast you couldn't see his legs moving. And he just zoom right off the edge of a cliff. Actually, went quite a ways off the edge of the cliff. Yeah, looked like he went out there several feet. And suddenly, oh my goodness, don't look down. Splat. But if you watch that, he runs on air for a while, okay? He actually runs on air for a while until he looks down. Don't look down. Jesus asked Peter, "Why do you doubt?" Hope got Peter out of the boat, trust held him up, and fear sunk him. All dependent upon our focus upon Jesus. Depression and anxiety and all those things happen when we lose sight of hope. Hope or trust, or we lose confidence. Hope is the fuel that the human heart runs on. People will get married not knowing what's going to happen in the future of their lives. Based on hope, they say, "I do." Hope of what they want or hope to have coming. Hope is what brings them back together when those marriages fail. And they come back together and they hope that they can keep the promises they originally have. Hope is what makes people bring children into this world. Because if you looked at all the negatives, you might decide that it wasn't worth it. Hope is what gives us hospitals. If every time you got sick, you had no hope of getting well, what would we need hospitals for? We need just hospices, places where people go to die. Hope is what gives us universities and colleges where people hope to go to learn more about how to do and deal with life as it comes to them. Hope gives us doctors and therapists and consultants because we hope that they can give us something to help us. Matisse, the great painter, painted when he was still so curled up in his hands from rheumatoid arthritis he could barely hold a brush. And they ask him why he kept painting. And he says, "The pain goes away, but the beauty stays. It endures." Pablo Casals, a great cellist, when he was over 80 years old, practiced the cello 5 hours a day. 5 hours a day. The greatest in the world, and acknowledged as being the greatest in the world on a cello of anyone had ever lived and probably would ever live, still practiced 5 hours a day. They ask him why. He says, I think I'm getting better. Michelangelo actually wrote some things besides painting and doing statues. Michelangelo, one night after crawling down from the scaffolding in the Sistine Chapel, laying flat on his back, painting. And I don't know if... I've been to the Sistine Chapel. You get a sense of it with pictures, but until you're there, you have, I don't think, any way to fathom what an accomplishment that was. The size of that ceiling that he painted and having to paint it on his back and get everything in proper proportion would be, I don't know how you do it. And he crawled down one night from the steel scaffolding and wrote in his journal, "I'm tired. I'm no painter. I'm no painter." But the next day, he got up and climbed the scaffolding because he hoped and painted. Hope is what made Abraham leave his home. Moses willing to take on Pharaoh. The prophets willing to take on evil. We cannot survive, and we certainly cannot survive well without hope. And focus on Jesus is where we get our hope. I don't ever want to try it. Do you ever wonder about the people who work on steel buildings? And they're up there 300 or 400 feet in the air, and they're walking on those beams. I would think that'd be a good place to don't look down. Don't look down. Look at the steel beam. Isn't it weird what our head does to us? You could lay that steel beam on the ground, and probably 95% of us could walk right down that steel beam. Put that thing 300 feet in the air, and half of us are going to be dead before we even get up there from a heart attack, and the other half are going to fall off. Look what our head does to us. The Bible calls the loss of hope as losing heart. But we need to remember that whatever happens, whatever Jesus sees fit to put in our way, he doesn't call people to sink. Jesus doesn't call people out of the boat to sink. He calls people out of the boat to walk on water. Isn't it interesting how we react to different situations? The same people reacting to situations. Isn't it interesting how we react differently? Moses sent 12 spies into the land, and 10 of them came back and said, "We can't go in there. We can't go in there. Those people are huge. They're huge. They'll destroy us." And 2 of them came back and said, "Not let's saw the same people, saw the same giants, saw the same land. So yeah, let's go ahead and take it." Same scenario. David's brothers were in the group that were watching Goliath parade in front of them every day and cowering in front of Goliath like all the rest of the army. David sees the same giant. Says, "God destroyed the bear, God destroyed the lion, God destroyed this Philistine." Same giant. Jesus and disciples were out in a storm. Accomplished sailors and fishermen. The boat is being tossed and turned every which way. They're in fear of their lives. What's Jesus doing in the same storm? Taking a nap. Taking a nap. In 1960, a man by the name of Salinger at the University of Pennsylvania, see, there are good things that come out of Pennsylvania, okay? At the University of Pennsylvania, did a study where he devised a double box, fairly high on the outside. It's a fairly good size thing with a low wall in the center. He took some dogs and he put them in one side and he didn't let them cross the low wall. And he shocked them, just mild shocks, just randomly, irregardless of what they're doing. One time they might be laying down, one time they might be sitting, one time they might be whatever. He just shocked them, okay? He took another set of dogs after those, and he put them in there, and he lowered the middle wall, and he shocked them. And they danced around and jumped around, as you might expect, and soon they learned if you jumped over the wall, you didn't get shocked. Well, guess what happens when you put the original set of dogs in the box where you get shocked? They lay down. They quit. They don't even try jumping over the little low wall in the middle. It's called learned helplessness, like giving up a reaction, a quitting response. That feeling that comes that no matter what you do, it really doesn't matter. Hope is extremely powerful. They did a study on kids going into college, SAT scores. They did a questionnaire on these kids of their relative optimism and pessimism about life and school and themselves in general. They found out it isn't your class ranking that determines how you'll do in college. It isn't your popularity, it's your hope, how you expect to do in college. They did another medical study on 122 men who had heart attacks. They again gave them a questionnaire to divide up the optimistic or hopeful from the pessimistic. Of those top 25 most pessimistic, 21 of them were dead 8 years later. Of the top 25 that were most pessimistic, 21 were dead 8 years later. Of the most optimistic, only 6 were dead 8 years later. Hope actually can heal us. When we come to believe in God, our idea of hope changes dramatically. There's a thing called self-efficiency that was branded by a man named Bandura, a Stanford psychologist. And it's a belief that I have mastery over events in my life and can handle whatever comes along. We call it a confidence in ourselves. Good to have. Good to have. But when I come to believe in God, it's not just what I'm capable of, it's what does God want me to do with His power, not just mine. And we're going to end up at a specific point here. Philippians 4 and 13, very common verse. Actually, we're going to start reading a little earlier than that because I like this context. Verse 10. Paul says, I rejoice in the Lord greatly now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful. You were careful before, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned. See if you can say this. I have learned in whatsoever. Covers a lot of ground. In whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere, and in all things, I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Now, does that mean I can leap tall buildings in a single bound and, you know, hit 100 home runs if I went to the major leagues and all those kinds of things? No, it means I can endure all things through Christ that strengthens me. I have confidence I can face whatever God throws at me. There is a difference between optimism and hope, and I do want you to get this. There is a difference between optimism and hope. Optimism is a belief in progress, that things will get better. Circumstances will get better. Things will turn around. Hope is God is with me regardless of how things happen to be doing or turning out for me today. They're not dependent upon circumstances. Optimism thinks things are going to get better. Hope doesn't necessarily. Hope says, I'll endure whatever it is because of God. They're different. They're different, and we need hope. Because guess what? Circumstances don't always turn out good for us. They just don't. Hope does not prevent me from expecting the worst. The worst is what you're hopeful are prepared for. We're prepared for because we're hopeful. So if the problem is I need to keep my mind focused on Jesus so that I can stay hopeful, just so that Jesus doesn't say to me, why do you doubt? How do I do that? Exactly how do I do that? Well, part of this goes back to understanding that we need to take care of our heads. We need to take care of our minds. When if you were going to go race at Doug's Indianapolis 500, it'll always be Doug's Indianapolis 500 to me. You're always going to go if you're going to go race at Doug's Indianapolis 500. Do you see those cars? Have you ever noticed those cars pulling out in a turnout lane on Indianapolis 500? There's a Casey's right there. Have you ever noticed those race cars pulling out and filling up at Casey's? Right there? Why not? It's cheaper. Why isn't there a lane to pull out and fill up the race car at Casey's? Because you don't put Casey's gas in a high-performance Indianapolis 500 car if you want to win. Maybe not even if you want to get around the track. I don't know. There isn't a Casey's turnoff. Or if you were training, now this would be my way of training. If you were training to run a marathon, you go on an all-chocolate diet. Now I love that idea. All-chocolate diet, training for a marathon. Or I have had this occur. People trying to feed young babies things that half the adults can't eat. We know what goes in affects the performance. We know it. But we forget it with our heads. We spend billions and billions and billions of dollars on our external bodies and ignore what's happening to our minds. My nurse practitioner was telling me the other day that she was at a place in this time of financial burden on a lot of people. She was at a place where they were doing chemical peels is what they were doing. Chemical peels, which is some kind of thing where you get rid of all the dead skin on your face and makes you look younger. Lobby was full of people there for chemical peels. Careful. $250 a buck, cash. We're full. Because we want to make sure that we look younger, I guess. Don't know if we're really fooling anybody. But we're so concerned with taking care of, and this is me, taking care of how I act and how I look that I forget about my head. Earlier up in Philippians 4, it says, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think. Think on these things. Think on these things. There are two laws. There's the law of cognition where it says you are what you think. You are what you think. How you think creates your attitude. It shapes your emotions. It governs your behavior. It influences you physically. How you think, and yet we ignore it a large amount of the time. We pretend it doesn't need any care. We take our bath every day. We might put on our makeup every day. We comb our hair, most of us, once a day, in a way. But we ignore this. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That is a active behavior. That's not something that just happens because I profess to believe in Jesus. Because I am one of His. It doesn't just happen. I make it happen. I have to make it happen. Or it's not going to happen. Our faith flows from our insides, not from the outside. The second law is the law of exposure, which you've all heard of. Your mind will think about what you're most exposed to. It's a law. It's not a suggestion. It's a law. Just like gravity is a law. So that's why we have, if I watch the wrong things on television, I will think about those things, be it teenagers or adults. Oh, it doesn't affect me. Dream on. Dream on. There's a verse in Isaiah 26:3. That will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed. That means it's locked down. It's on a foundation. Stayed on thee because he trusteth in thee. That's how we find some peace. And you have control of this. You have control of this. What you think about and what you do. I read about a guy who wanted to do this. He had some suggestions. And these are just, they may sound silly to you, but these are the kinds of things that affect us. This fellow said he tried to have double vision whenever he was in a social setting. Whenever he looked at somebody, he looked at what they were and what Jesus saw they could be. Think about it. If everybody you met, you could look at them with double vision. This fellow said he always set an extra chair at the table, an empty chair, to remind him that Jesus was there. Silly, maybe, but maybe not. He talked about talking to Jesus. What do you talk about? We call it praying. You don't have to pray to talk to Jesus. Talking to Jesus. He talked about reminders and going to bed and getting up. I can tell you my wife is a much more faithful person than I am, okay? It's a much stronger person. I'm much stronger physically, I think. But as far as her faith, she is light years ahead of me, particularly recently. And I can tell you there have been times when the only thing that kept me semi-level was the fact that she prayed at night and she read me things at night. I felt like Saul and David, okay? Felt like Saul and David because she was providing what I needed as far as hope. Sometimes people, we talk about meditation. In Psalms 119th Psalm in 97, David says, "Oh, how I love thy law, it's my meditation all the day." I want to talk about meditation for a little bit because we have this perception that meditation is a monk sitting in a corner going, hum, hum. And I ran across a statement that scared me because it was so true about meditation. And I want you to think about this for just a little bit. If you can worry, you can meditate. If you can worry, you can meditate. Now what is worry? Worry is something that bothers me. And what do you do when you're really worried about something? It comes up, whatever you do, all day long. It keeps raising its ugly head. Even the slightest things will remind you that you're worried of that. If you can worry, you can meditate. That's meditation about the wrong things, is all it is. The other thing is rituals. The Church of Christ has always been reluctant, and I understand why, about rituals. But you realize that we all have rituals or habits that we go through to perform all manner of functions. You know, sports figures have rituals that they go through. I read about some baseball player that hadn't changed his, he wore the same socks or the same shirt for I don't know how many games in a row because they'd been winning. If you watch a basketball player play basketball, we actually teach them a ritual to shoot free throws. It's a ritual. If you don't get it right, you will miss the free throw. If you're used to bouncing it twice, looking, bounce once more, and shoot, that's what you do every single time. We need rituals to remind ourselves that God is still there and focus on Him. There's a story I may have told you before, but I'm going to tell you it again because I like it so much. Okay? There's a story about a woman who was very, very ill. In fact, she was so ill that she knew her time was limited until she was going to pass on. So she went to see her preacher, sat down with the preacher, and they went through her arrangements for her funeral. They went through the psalm book and picked out the songs. She kind of talked to him about her family and experiences and things she'd like to have mentioned. Some scripture that was particularly meaningful to her. They had it all planned out, and she got up to leave and got to the door and said, Oh, I almost forgot one thing. Said, I want to be buried with my fork. He said, oh, what? Says, I want to be buried with my fork in my right hand. He said, why? She said, because every time I've ever went to somewhere where we had a lot of good food to eat, when they say, you can keep your fork, that means something good's coming. They don't serve Jell-O after they say, you can keep your fork. The good stuff's coming now, okay? And she says, I won't be buried with my fork because the good stuff's coming now. And everybody that went by the casket says, what is that woman doing with a fork in her hand? And everybody heard the same story. The good stuff is coming. The good stuff is coming. Why do I doubt? Why did I get discouraged? Why did I get depressed? The same reason Peter got wet. Because I lose my focus. Now the God of hope, the God of hope, fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope through the power of the Holy Ghost. That's what we want. Why do we all doubt at times? Why does our faith go up and down? Why do we sometimes despair? Sometimes it's panic, feel inadequate. Because we are. Without looking at Jesus and using Him, we are inadequate. We need to panic. And we're going to get wet. This morning, the message is, let's focus on Jesus and try to let Him carry us through. And we can do things, all things. We can go through anything that the world throws at us. It may not be optimistic. It may not be good stuff that comes, but it'll be hopeful because God can take us through no matter what. Off the invitation, we stand and sing the closing song.